Today, FBI Director Robert Mueller cited the mission in Yemen as he urged Congress to reauthorize certain forms of surveillance of foreigners to prevent attacks. Our next guest says Congress needs to act on cyber attacks. Congress is debating proposals to improve the security of U.S. computer systems. The House just passed a measure to increase information sharing between the government and technology companies. But some businesses are worried about consumer privacy. And the president has threatened a veto. He's worried about classified information going the other way, from the government to private companies. The Senate's also debating two bills. Arizona Republican John McCain's relies on voluntary action by companies, in other words, no regulations. Another from Senators Joe Lieberman and Susan Collins, with administration support, would establish federal cybersecurity standards that critical companies like utilities would have to meet. Whatever Congress does, our next guest says it's overdue. According to a new report, the U.S. is woefully unprepared, and Sean Henry says there is already a cyber war going on. He was the top cybersecurity official at the FBI. He retired recently to become president of the security firm CrowdStrike Services. Sean, welcome.
Thanks, Robin. Glad to be here.
You said recently the cyber threat is an existential threat. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that too oftentimes people think about the theft of credit cards and the theft of personally identifiable information or some money was taken out of my bank account, which certainly are important things that we need to address. But I think that the cyber threat is much, much larger than that, much more substantial, and that the attack on critical infrastructure can actually have physical implications, which could cripple our country in certain respects and could actually lead to death. You think about our water treatment facilities, pumping water, pumping fuel out of the ground, the transportation sector, if the trains were to stop running or if airlines couldn't take off the ground. These are the types of things that run and require computers. The reality of it is those computers, when they're touching the network, are vulnerable. We've said for a long time that a determined adversary with enough time and enough money can get into any computer system. And quite frankly, the offense outpaces the defense, and that is a threat to all of us.
You mentioned stealing personal information. There's also hacking, cyber attacks, just to demonstrate that it can be done. But what else has already been done?
There are many, many companies involved with developing our next-generation weapons systems, clear defense contractors that do very sensitive work for the government that have been breached by foreign intelligence services. There are companies in many sectors like the retail sector, the energy sector, the financial services sector that have been breached by foreign intelligence services as well as organized crime groups. And the value of the data that's been taken, it's research and development, it's intellectual property, it is information that has taken billions of dollars to create, millions of man hours to manufacture, and that information has been stolen and is being used by adversaries to undermine our economy, to embolden or empower the host government's companies, and it has an impact on our economic and national security.
In fact, the U.S. Cyber Consequences Unit, a research group, has assessed that the annual loss of intellectual property and investment opportunities across industries is $6 to $20 billion. One company lost $1 billion, 10 years worth of research in one weekend. I think you, when you were at the FBI, were aware of that. Others have been forced to close.
We had a company that actually, it was a small company, but they were literally in business on a Friday. They had an attack over the weekend, and on Monday they were out of business because they lost all their operating capital. The reality of it is, once an adversary has an access on the network that is as pervasive as we've seen, they also have the ability to change the data, moving decimal points a couple of places to the left or the right, or changing the coordinates on a weapon system. It's not just about the confidentiality of our data, but it's also about what the adversaries can do to the data once they're physically on that network.
Well, then we have this report from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. It was the National Preparedness Report, and it really is to assess how states would respond to crisis after Hurricane Katrina and 9/11. So we're taking in a big picture view of the emergency medical reaction, utilities, far broader. For instance, all but three states found they had sufficient staffing capacity to have medical workers who could work 12-hour days for 6 to 8 weeks, that kind of response. But then when it got down to cybersecurity, that seemed to be the most troubling response. It was the single core capability where states had made the least amount of overall progress. Only 42% of state and local officials said that theirs was adequate. 45% said they didn't have a formal program to prevent and respond to. attacks. You probably already knew this.
Yeah, you know, Robin, it's interesting because when you use Hurricane Katrina, that's an example I've used many times in the past, the cascading impact of an attack. So in Hurricane Katrina, after the hurricane and the flooding, the power was out. And the types of things that you saw subsequent to that after just 3 or 4 or 5 days were people starting to die. And when I talk about an existential threat, I think Katrina is an example. That was a natural disaster. But if you think about somebody actually turning the electric off within a city, that cascading impact where people can't go to work and work X number of shifts, where people can't get the necessary life-sustaining care that they need, all because the electricity is out or all because there's not potable water.
Okay, well, let's talk about what you advise, because the FBI has made great strides in finding some of these organized groups and arresting them. But you say that's not even the issue anymore. It's too late to play defense. We need to play offense. What do you mean?
I'm very proud of my service at the FBI, and I've worked with so many incredibly capable people there, and I think that we have had a lot of success. But I also have said that the private sector needs to take a larger role in this defense, because the government currently doesn't have the authority to protect the .com space. So the government protects .mil and the government protects .gov, the military and the government networks, but the commercial space is not being protected right now by any particular agency.
Can I hold you up for 1 second? Do you think the government is really protecting .gov and .mil? I mean, they have been penetrated.
They have the authority to do it. I know that there are a lot of people that are working very hard to do that, people that I've worked with very closely for a long time. But there's nobody that has the authority to protect the .com space. And
right.
I recognize that there are concerns people have about privacy and about civil liberties and the aggregation of data, which you referred to. And I understand that. I mean, I protected civil liberties and civil rights for 24 years during my service in the FBI. But I believe that if that's not going to happen and the government is not going to be in that space, then the private sector needs to innovate and the private sector needs to do more. For too many years, we have been playing defense and we've been building bigger walls and we've been putting new firewalls in place and we've been looking at malware and we've tried to parry the blows. We're trying to defend against the attack. And you cannot stand there and continue to take punches over and over and over again. There's more that network operators can do internally to protect their networks, being proactive, where they can start to identify who the adversary is. And by doing that, when you start to recognize their tactics, their techniques, their procedures, you can start to build a profile of who they are. And when you do that, you can become predictive about where they're going and what they're going to do once they're resident on your network, and then you can start to become preventative.
We're talking about cybersecurity, the topic of hot debate in Washington. Here's Army General Keith Alexander at a Senate hearing in March explaining Defense Department thinking on the matter.
When we see what our folks are capable of doing, we need to look back and say, there are other smart people out there that can do things to this country. We need to look at that and say, how are we going to defend?
You might have heard NPR's Tom Gelton's terrific reports on this over the past couple of days. He also spoke with Mike McConnell, former U.S. Director of National Intelligence, who underlined the urgency, telling Tom that a key concern is a lot of countries are creating tools to fight cyber battles, but there are so many out there, they could actually be turned into weapons.
The worry is what happens when some of those tools, and there are thousands of them, get released inadvertently, or it's somebody steals it to sell to a terrorist group, somebody who has a different view of the world order and wants to change things.
And the biggest debate is over how do the government and the private sector intersect? Tom talked about how the government has been holding special one-day classified security briefings 2 or 3 times a year, part of a private-public partnership called Enduring Security Framework, in which CEOs of major companies like Hewlett-Packard are taken behind closed doors to hear what other nations are developing and what the U.S. has in its own arsenal. As one government official told Tom Gelton, we're scaring the bejesus out of them. And Richard Belchis, chief security officer for a security company called Mandiant, said the experience was life-changing for one CEO.
You got a one-day secret clearance. General Alexander sat him down, told him what was going on. This particular CEO, in my opinion, should have known, but did not. And now it's colored everything about the way he thinks about this problem.
And we've been talking about cybersecurity with Sean Henry. He was the head of cybersecurity for the FBI. He recently retired to become president of CrowdStrike Services, a security firm. He'd been explaining to us the threat to our data is an existential threat, a cyber version of Hurricane Katrina. Sean, you're looking particularly at what companies should be doing because even in the U.S., many critical infrastructure companies, like power companies, are private. So where do you think companies should start?
Companies need to assume that there is an adversary on their network. You cannot wait anymore for your intrusion detection system or your firewall to provide you with an indication that there's been a breach, because the significance and the capabilities of the adversaries that we've seen allow them to jump right over the wall. When I was in the Bureau, there were dozens and dozens and dozens of times where we showed up, told the CEO or some senior level official that the network was breached. We found that company's data elsewhere on the internet. And in many cases, these companies did not know that they'd been breached. And in many cases, they'd been breached for months. In the physical world, it would be equivalent to you coming home from work, you come into your house, and you get a knock on the door from a police officer, says, we just found your television and $500 cash in the street or around the corner in somebody else's house. And you didn't even know that somebody had broken into your home. You had no idea that these materials were even missing.
You said something like, if the government isn't going to do something about this, business has to. Weigh in on this. I know you're a former government employee, so you may hesitate in part, but you know, the debate seems to be over privacy. But on the one hand, we have President Obama's administration pushing Congress. We hear there's a drumbeat from the Obama administration about the need for Congress to pass legislation giving the Department of Homeland Security some authorities to regulate this. On the other hand, the U.S. Chambers of Commerce, big lobbying group, which was itself breached, lost information on its 3 million members, but it's fighting any kind of regulation. It wants industry to be self-regulating. Where do you come down on this?
It's an incredibly complex situation because of privacy issues, because of policy issues, because of legal issues. So when I said earlier, you know, the government has the authority to work in the .mil space and the .gov space, the government owns those networks, but the vast majority of the networks are in private sector hands, and it's their responsibility to step up, and it's their responsibility to innovate and protect their networks. The government is working hard. I've been up on the Hill, and I've spoken to many legislators about some of these challenges that we face and about some of the things that I believe that we can do better as a government to help protect the private sector. But these are complex issues that may take years to navigate, and in the interim, U.S. corporations are being hit every single day, and we can't just wait for a solution to come up.
How do you feel about the government requiring businesses, maybe not to share their information with intelligence agencies, but requiring that businesses prove that they're undertaking some of the proactive moves that you talk about?
These are the types of discussions that we need to continue to have. Information sharing is critical. When I was in the FBI, the success we had in identifying adversaries and actually going out and putting our hands on them to take them off the playing field to actually mitigate the threat, in those cases, the vast majority of those investigations, it was a company coming forward and saying that they had some information that was of value that allowed us to kind of get on the trail immediately. I recognize that the private sector and the public has concerns about how we do that. But I think the private sector needs to understand what the threat is and understand that there needs to be actions. We go every single day, get on an airplane, and it takes 15 or 20 minutes. We've got to go through security. We've got to take our jacket off. We've got to take our shoes off. We've got to walk through the magnetometer. There's not a person in the United States that wants to do that, but everybody recognizes that there's a serious threat that we face. There are people who have threatened our society. They want to kill people. They want to blow up planes. I think on the network side, it's very similar.
Well, meanwhile, you advise companies to keep their most valuable data off their networks. Is that possible?
What I've suggested or recommended to companies is think about what you actually put on the network. Because we have a network doesn't mean we have to put everything on there. There's data that can be compartmented. There's data that can be put on the network only for the very purpose of sharing it and then taken off the network. There are certain operating procedures that would make them safer and would help to better protect their valuable information.
That's Sean Henry, again, the top FBI cybersecurity official until recently. He retired and became president of CrowdStrike Services, a private company aiming to get companies to assess and respond to potential cyber attacks. Sean, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks, Robin. I appreciate your time.